Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Coffee English Podcast. We are here today with Zach Lowy as usual. How are you doing, Zach?
I'm doing great. We've got some great. We've got a great guest lined up for you. Just recorded our recent podcast with Cristiano Oliveira, which was awesome. But we got something a bit different with our new guest, and I'm super excited to be finally talking to him. And yeah, really excited to be discussing the themes we've got lined up for you today.
Yeah, and so we're going to introduce that new guest here today. Our guest today is João Mateus. How are you doing, João?
Yeah, I'm great. I'm great, Dennis. Thanks for the invitation. Zach told that he was looking forward to talk to me. I'm looking forward to talk to them and to you as well, but I don't promise anything good, so don't have high expectations.
All right, let's get straight into it then. First, I want to talk about Sporting, obviously. Top of the league, we've spoken about them quite a bit this season, and obviously, you know, high flying. What, 10 points clear at the top and pretty much looked dead on to win the Primeira Liga. However, we wanted to take a deep look at what has made Sporting a side that has gone to the next level compared to last season and what has pushed them beyond Porto and beyond Benfica and all the rest in the Portuguese league and what has made them that top level team. So, João, I just want to ask you first, what were your initial thoughts when you saw Ruben Amorim's Sporting side, you know, this season, coming into the season?
Well, I was looking forward with a lot of expectation, I guess, not only from Ruben Mourinho work in Braga and therefore in Casa Pia, which is a lower team here or a lower side team here in Portugal, but I was with high expectations, mostly because the players that Sporting signed, like Pedro Gonçalves, Nuno Santos, the comeback, if you will, of Palhinha to the club, and let me start my analysis of Sporting by talking with about Palhinha. I believe in the last episode with David Novo, David ended up the podcast mentioning Palhinha, so I will take advantage of that to bridge the gap between the two episodes. And using João Palhinha as a base to talk about Sporting and why he's so important for the team. In fact, he's really a key piece in the model of Ruben Amorim, not only in a macro point of view, if you will, in the way he guarantees that Sporting is always balanced when they lost the ball, but in a more micro perspective as well. For example, how he gives João Mário much more freedom with the ball, allowing him to take a more risky situation, which is a thing that last year when Sporting had Wendel and Mateus Nunes, it was not necessarily the case. You didn't have a player like Palhinha with that huge area of influence covering a massive amount of space. And that impact that Palhinha has on Sporting team allows Sporting to start preparing the moment when they recover the ball at the same time they are defending, which is very, very interesting. If you look at Sporting games, the three forwards don't need to get down the field as much, and in fact, as we are talking about the forwards, one of the key features of this Sporting team for me is the coordination of those three forwards, which is quite remarkable indeed. The way they fulfill the spaces between the three with those contrasting movements between support, rupture. They are quite fundamental, not only to dismantle the opponents when they are in the organization phase, but Also, when Sporting are looking to build up from lower positions under pressure and establishing high up the field. And it's curious that we are talking about this because, and I know if you heard Zach and Dennis, recently you had Sergio Conceição and Daniel Ramos, which is the coach of Santa Clara, saying that it's easy, or at least not that hard, to understand all Sporting plays, but it's very difficult to counter. Because in a simple way, you have two options to play against Sporting, or you either give up pressing high up the field all the way to Adan, to have high degree of control of the depth, as Gil Vicente did, for example, or even Passos de Ferreira, or you choose to push up the field and leave a large amount of space behind your defensive line. So at first, the first option to don't press that high seems safe, seems the safest at least, or at first sight, but it implies that your defensive line is very competent, not only in controlling the depth, but in the way it regulates the height in a coordinated way. And the second way of playing against Sporting, it's like, for example, like Porto played in the League Cup, more aggressive and gives more aggressive pressing, but that gives a lot of space behind the defensive line to Sporting to explore, and especially in this kind of games, when the opponents press the Sport high up the field, the signing of Paulinho, for example, it's massive for me. It's very important, the signing of Paulinho, because he's a player that is perfect and is perfect for the way that the Ruben Amorim thinks the game. He's someone very strong, playing in support between the lines and asking for the ball behind the midfielders, and those kind of movements opens the spaces in depth, as Sporting like so much. So I think all things together, the way Sporting prepared the season for me was very important. The signings that they made was very 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 well thought, I guess. If you see like Porro, massive player nowadays, Nuno Santos, massive player, Pedro Gonçalves, massive player. So if you think about all the players that are new in Sporting, and I'm here including João Palhinha as well, are massive for Sporting at this stage. And so preparation was very important to me as well.
Bro, real quick, do you think that, in the past two games, Sporting have managed to achieve impressive results, but they did get outplayed by Porto, who had the better amount of chances, while Santa Clara came very close to drawing, even winning that game on Friday. Mm-hmm. Do you think that they will be forced to adapt going into next season?
Adapt in terms of the way they play?
Yes.
This is a very interesting topic because Ruben Amorim, and if you look at Santa Clara game, for example, Pedro Porro was not fit to play. And when all of us, at least the majority of us, thought that João Pereira was replacing Porro as the right wing back, Amorim played Matheus Nunes. And this is very interesting because Ruben Amorim has told, I think in some press conference at least, that he is not very keen to change the system. He likes to maintain the system, but change the pieces to give different dynamics. I don't know if you are understanding me. So in the future, I really don't think that Amorim will change the system. I think he will bring players that offer him different solutions and different dynamics within the system. So I think is a process. I believe that next season you will see Gonçalo Inácio exploding, for example. Well, he's kind of exploding right now, but I think next season will be very important for Sporting, and if everything goes as expected, you will see Sporting playing Champions League football next season, which will be very different, because Sporting nowadays is playing one game a week. And never played Europe competitions this season. So there's a little factor, if you will, but is massive in terms of the way you prepare the season and the amount of players that you need to have to be competitive in all the competitions.
What do you make about the summer business from Sporting and forming the team in Ruben Amorim's image, almost like securing the players that were needed for the 3-4-3 that he wanted to play?
Yeah, no, I mean, that is a great point. I think that going into the summer, a lot of us, maybe Joao too, were skeptical of this business, just because they're compared to Benfica, for example, who brought in players such as, you know, Darwin Nunes, Jan Vertonghen, big names, a lot of players with big potential, or a team like Porto, who, you know, arguably got the best striker in the league in Meri Taremi, as well as getting in some quality reinforcements. It did seem a bit underwhelming, especially given the fact that it seemed like they would sell Palhinha to Wolves. I know a Russian club was also mentioned as a potential suitor. But I think that looking back in hindsight, it was a brilliant summer from Frederic Varandas. Obviously, the number one, indisputably best signing, probably in all of Portugal, I think. I would go as far as say he's the best player in Portugal right now. Pedro Gonçalves, who, by the way, we have a really good article coming up on Breaking the Lines this week on Pedro Gonçalves. It's very in-depth, so stay tuned for that. I think that he's been I think that he's definitely been the number one talisman, I guess, in attack. There are games where even if he doesn't score, he'll still make an impact. Or even if he doesn't make, you know, that assist or doesn't have a great game, he'll still find a way to get on the score sheet. So I think that getting him, finding a player with that, I guess, individual quality, that ability to replace Bruno Fernandes, but also fit in attack, I think that was a masterstroke. I think that apart from that, João Mário, I gotta say, really underrated in terms of his role in this Sporting title challenge. I think that getting him in, just one, for the experience that he brings, you know, bringing in a Euro winner, a Portugal international, and having him up, you know, mentor guys like Nuno Mendes, for example, or Pedro Pojo, or Gonçalo Inácio, it's absolutely massive. But, you know, I think that the fact that he hasn't been, I guess that it's been a while since he's been kind of in the spotlight, that a lot of us forgot that this is still a quality player who can offer a lot. We talked about, you know, a week ago and how important he was in the game against Porto. So I think getting him in and having that combination with Palhinha and Mario, absolutely massive for them. I would also like to say that Zuhair Fedal, another player who deserves a lot of praise, having him brought in and replacing Jeremy Mateu after his retirement, been fantastic in that left center back role. One of those players who, you know, never quite impressed that much in a back four for Betis, but has always had those fundamentals to play in that as that wide center back role. So I think that Pedro Pojo, obviously, probably the best right back slash right wing back in Portugal right now, getting him from Manchester City on loan, another great move from them. And really, I think that Sporting should definitely be trying to get him on a permanent deal or at least extend his loan. I don't see him having a big role in Manchester City next season. So if they could get him done on a permanent deal, that would be massive. So, you know, you have to give a lot of credit to Varandas and everybody for getting these quality reinforcements in. And I'd also just like to finally touch up on two players, Antonio Adan, bring him in on a free transfer after spending the past few years as Jan Oblak's number two at Atletico Madrid. He's been absolutely fantastic, really, I think, providing what they have lacked since Rui Patricio left, you know, in terms of experience, but also just arguably been the best goalkeeper in the league this season, as well as Nuno Santos coming in. You know, he had spent some time at Porto and Benfica's academy, but he's finally playing the best football of his career next to on the other side of Pedro Gonçalves in attack. You know, he had that impressive season under Carlos Carvalhal at Rio Ave and is now doing quite well at Sporting for a pretty nice bargain. I know there were a lot of skeptics when Sporting did part with Gelson Dalla and Francisco Geralds for Nuno Santos, but he's been absolutely massive for them in attack. And I think the fact that Pote has been so good and will probably win the player of the year has led a lot of people to underrate Santos's performances, but he's been absolutely fantastic for them this season.
I just wanted to touch up on the role of Paulinho that João mentioned in the midfield, you know, allowing players around him to push on, you know, whether that be João Mario or, you know, Pedro Gonçalves ahead of him, you know, not to track back. I think that's one of the most important roles in most football clubs. I mean, if you look at Man City, for example, it's someone that's capable of being able to prevent transitions, you know, basically be a one-man block against defense for defensive transitions. And I think that's so key for allowing Ruben Amorim to be able to push forward the three attackers and keep them quite narrow, because obviously a lot of teams like to attack in wide areas in modern football. But, you know, the confidence to basically say, you know what, you can come at us through the wide areas. We'll stay with our three centre-backs and basically Paulinho only in the midfield. And we're confident enough to deal with your transitions, because that's how most teams have approached Sporting this season. You know, like João was saying, you know, sitting deeper and potentially trying to hit them on the counter-attack. But when you have someone like Paulinho, or, you know, in Pep Guardiola's Man City's prime, that would be Fernandinho, obviously being able to, you know, completely shut off transitions and get the ball back to your attackers who can then sustain attacks is one of the most crucial things I feel in Sporting this season. And I feel it's really been a massive game changer. João, what do you think about that?
Yeah, it's precisely what I was discussing earlier. It's for me it's massive, and Zach talk about Pote possibly being named player of the season, especially if Sporting is crowned champion. Normally, I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but normally the team that won the championship, the player from that team is crowned the best player of the league. And with Pote, with that amount of goals, possibly it will be hard to argue against him. But if you want to look deep, or a little bit deeper, for me, Polina, it was completely a game changer this season for Sporting. And especially if you want to look back at the beginning of Ruben Amorim campaign in Sporting, which was last year. And he didn't have Polina. He usually played Wendel, which is now at Zenit. I believe it's still in Zenit. And Mateus Nunes. And the way they build up, of course, they didn't have the preseason. They didn't have all of that. But the way they build up the game, the amount of chances that they concede to the opponents, the amount of shots that they concede to the opponents was massively different. And of course, it's a little bit risky and perhaps wrong to compare to different seasons with like I'm doing, but if you look, I don't have here the statistics, but I saw that Sporting is the team that concedes the least amount of chances not only chances to the opponents, but to shots on goal, and that you can talk about the central defenders, of course. You can talk about the articulation between the defensive line, all of that. But the way that Polina controls the transitions, the way he guarantees that the team is always balanced when they have the ball and always ready to lose the ball. It's incredible. And even when you see situations when Sporting is not particularly balanced, he is so physically strong that he can compensate and balance even when you are in balance. And so for me, he's definitely a big change, a massive change this year. And who knows that if you will see him in Euro this season as well.
Yeah, just to touch up on that finally, there have been a few players who have won the Primera Liga Player of the Year. Despite not winning the title, Simão did it with Benfica back in 2007. Nemanja Matic did it for Benfica as well. And Bruno Fernandes did it twice. But with that being said, I don't think there's any player outside of Sporting who deserves it more than players such as João Palhinha, Pedro Gonçalves, or one player we haven't mentioned, but recently won Player of the Month, Sebastian Coates. How good has he been in the center of defense? I mean, absolutely spectacular from the Uruguayan. Yes,
especially in my fantasy league.
Absolutely.
Let's move on. Let's take a deep dive into the other team that I wanted to speak about today, which is Vitória de Guimarães. This season, Vitória have been, I think, a little bit hit and miss. They're kind of stuck in this no man's land in the league right now, where they're not quite part of the trailing group, you know, towards the bottom table that stretches up to seventh place, Morenés. But they're not quite tagging on to the likes of Braga and Porto and Sporting, of course. This season, I think, they've had to struggle with a bit of inconsistency. You know, they had a decent summer, especially bringing in Ricardo Quaresma, who has started his fair share of games. I think they've had to deal with a lot of inconsistency. And I think that's mostly due to how many young players they have in their squad. We know that, obviously, some managers can handle the younger players better, such as Ruben Amorim. You know, look at how well he's done with youngsters. But you just feel this Vitória side, you know, there are core principles that are in their play that you can tangibly see. You know, the fact that the fullbacks like getting up the field and overlapping while the wingers come inside, you know, the likes of Edwards or Quaresma, like I said, coming in from the right-hand side and to the left, occupying mainly the half spaces and essentially taking up somewhat of a Liverpool model where the midfield is basically there to provide more of a physicality function rather than, you know, be the technical providers for the team. I think the principles are there, but they've just been quite a bit inconsistent. You know, when we look at Quaresma, he's not been, you know, on it this season, let's say. Same thing with Edwards, same thing with pretty much all their players. And it'll be interesting to see where they go from here, because obviously their whole season could change, you know. If they put together a massive winning streak now, who knows, they could be in Europe next season. But I think, especially with the Braga game coming up, I think tomorrow is it, it will be interesting to see how they end the season, and especially how they deal with the summer and move into the next season. And, you know, if they'll be able to keep their key players, such as, you know, Estupiñan, Saku, Quaresma and Edwards. Let's come to you first, Zach. What do you think of Vitória this season, from what you've seen?
Yeah, I mean, it is a bit, as you mentioned, kind of, I would say, stagnant. But at that same time, they are only, what, I believe, 3-6 points behind Paços de Ferreira. I think if they beat Braga tomorrow, which is obviously easier said than done, they'll be, I think, 3 points. But yeah, you know, as you mentioned, it has been a bit of a decline from last season. Although when you look at the stats, when you look at the results, hasn't been that much of a drop off. But you know, I think that one player who, you know, we've talked about a lot and who hasn't quite hit the, I would say, the form of last season, it's still a fantastic player, and as they Marcus Edwards, in Vitória's last game against Boavista, he had some real moments of quality. But I think that coupled with Quaresma's arrival, as well as just some, I would say, maybe some defenders getting used to his style, he hasn't been as good or as, I guess, decisive as he was last season. But I think that he's still a very good, a promising winger, and definitely a player who will probably get a move soon. One player who actually I've liked a lot and has sort of performed in a variety of roles, but has more, I guess, impressed in midfield this season, has been André Almeida, not the Benfica right back, but the Vitória central midfielder. He's just sort of very unique, I guess, in terms of his playing style. You know, he has ability to slow down the moments and control the rhythm of the game. Very interesting midfielder. And I would say that I think that whereas, you know, Marcus Edwards and Edmund Tapsoba were probably the breakthrough players of last season for Vitória, you could even throw in Folai Sacco potentially. I think that the breakthrough star for Vitória de Guimarães this season would probably be André Almeida. I think that midfield in general, with players such as Pepe Lu, André, it's just a very good midfield trio. And I think that Almeida, I'm not sure if he's going to get a move outside of Portugal soon, just because he is, I'd say, a bit lightweight. But he is one of those players who, you know, we've mentioned Felipe Suarez, Steven Eustáquio. There's just a ton of quality midfielders outside of Os Três Grandes, just outside of the top three. And I think that Almeida is one of those players who could be perhaps getting a move to one of those big three soon. He's just a very technically gifted midfielder, knows when to pass, knows which player to pick out. Very intelligent player. And yeah, I'm interested to see what you guys think of him.
João, what are your thoughts on Vitória on the whole this season, as well as, you know, their individual players?
Yeah, if you want to compare, I begin my explain my point of view of Sporting, talking about the way they preparate the season. And if you look at Vitória, for me, it's completely the opposite. The way they prepare the season was not ideal. Not only because of the I want to say mistake. I don't know if I can say that mistake in choosing Thiago as a head coach. And I'm not saying here in terms of being being experienced or not. If you have quality, if you have competence. For example, look at Ruben Amorim. He's not experienced as a coach, but he's very competent, as we are seeing. But I think the season was not very well thought. That's my point of view. And then João Henrique was ended up in a situation not. Ended up in a not very comfortable situation. A lot of players, as you mentioned, Dennis, were bring up to Guimarães. Of course, all of them with a lot of quality. But when you are a new manager that didn't was able to do a preseason, to know the players, to install your dynamics, your way of thinking the game, and plus that you have a locker room with even the players don't know themselves quite good. It's hard. It's hard, and it was not an easy task for João Henrique. Zach, talking about André Almeida. I really like him as well. I think Jorge Fernandes, which is the central defender, right central defender, I think is very good as well. I don't want to risk it, but I think he made his youth formation at Porto. He's very good on the ball. I like seeing him in a few games that I was able to see. But yeah, I think it's hard to make a very good analysis in Vitória in terms of what failed, what didn't go so well, because the season was not well prepared, in my point of view. I don't know if you agree, Zach, but when you don't prepare the season well, when you don't build the house in the right way, it's hard. It's hard to find the problems and to perform well.
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely agree with what you said. Dennis, do you have anything?
Yeah, so I just think that, if you look at the squad planning this season at Vitória, you look at experience in the squad, going through their whole team, they have two players who are over the age of 30. One of them is new signing Ricardo Quaresma, who also has a lot of experience and quality, but he's 37 years of old, years of age, and he's definitely not going to be improving throughout his time at Vitória. And the other player is Andrea, who's obviously been one of their better players this season. But even so, that's just two players who are over the age of 30, and Andrea is literally 30 years old. So you feel like the squad dynamic is one that's of a squad that's building for something else. However, one of the key problems that I feel with that is you just have the feeling that, if their squad does come together and, the younger players and the older players in the squad can put something together and, potentially get Vitória into Europe, you just feel that the next season, all of their young players are just going to get poached from bigger teams, either in Portugal or in Europe. We talk about Marcus Edwards, who's, by far one of the most likely players to leave there in the near future. You also look at Lau Foster, who they signed, the South African. There's a lot of young players in there, including André Almeida, like you said, like you were talking about, Zach, who's 20 years old. I think it's going to be very hard for them to have long-term success with, or even short-term success with such a young squad. What do you think, João, about, you know, having a lack of experience and relying so much on young players?
Well, I think it's important, but it's not crucial. You have the best example in Sporting. You have a lot of players, a lot of young players, really. And we have Thiago Tomás, 18 years old. We have Nuno Mendes. Even the players that are the second options, like Daniel Bragança, who was on loan at Estoril. So we have a lot of potential and a lot of young players. But as you said, you need to have some experienced players, because and Ruben Amorim, I believe he talked about this in one of his press conferences, when he explained why it's important to have experienced players in the team, and he talked about why he signed João Pereira from Trabzonspor this winter transfer window, because it's not that those things that we hear in the coffees or in the pubs, like you have to have experience. But it's really true, because there are months on in the season and in the game that you need to know how to manage the time, how to manage your emotions, knowing when the game is asking you to do to speed up, knowing when you have to calm the game. And in Vitória, you have that in two players, as you said, Dennis. But for me, I will just bring again this point. For me, the way they prepare the season in the technical, in terms of the technical staff, for me was the key factor to have a very inconstant. I'm missing the word here, but not very free rolling season, if you like.
Inconsistent.
João Henriques for me is a great manager. The work he did in Santa Clara, in a very specific context, in the Santa Clara is a very low team from a small island in Portugal, when you have to travel week in and week out. So it's very different, and it's very difficult to train there. One time he told in a press conference, in an interview, that many of the times, because of the weather in the island, he had to go to the other side of the island to train, because the pitch was not good to train. So he's a coach that has for sure the experience difficulties, and I'm expecting and I'm looking forward to see him coach with the preseason in the bag, and I think he will do good in Vitória. He knows how to work with your youth players. I have some friends that were coached by him here in a team that unfortunately with this COVID situation ended up closing doors, which is Fatima. He coached here in the fourth division, third division. So I know he's a very competent manager with working with youth players, and I'm looking forward to see him. To see what he does in Vitória with a full pre-season, and in a more calm situation with the regress of the fans, because Vitória is very strong at home with the support of the fans, and let's see what next season brings.
Maybe towards towards the latter stages of today's podcast. We wanted to do our traditional talent of the week section today, and I think I'll start off this episode. And the one that I wanted to mention is someone that's been sent out on loan by Fran Santos at Benfica to Spain, and that is Jota. This season, I think he has not been able to perform. He hasn't been given a lot of chances, but from what we saw from him last season, you know, especially in the latter stage of last season, where he was getting more and more minutes, I think we saw a player with a lot of potential. You know, one of the key things was his ability to play on the left and on the right. You know, his dribbling style was such that he could go with his left or his right foot. You know, some players are much more comfortable on one foot to dribble, and so that kind of limits where they can play on the field. But you feel with Jota, you know, on the right, he can even come in, play a through pass on his left foot, or he can go down the right, down the channel and get in a good cross. And we saw that from him quite a bit towards the end of the season, last season with Benfica. But you just feel like he's not caught his break yet. You know, I was speaking a couple months ago to somebody that was in contact with one of the Benfica youth coaches. And, you know, the Benfica youth coaches were saying, look, Jota is one of the best talents we've ever seen here in Seychelles. You know, there are a lot better talents that we've seen. And, you know, they've seen plenty of great talents. You know, if you just think about the exports into Europe, you know, you look at João Félix, you look at Ederson, you look, there's so many players. And for them to say that Jota was, you know, one of, if not the best talent that they've ever seen, I think is speaking very highly of his qualities. And, you know, obviously he has to put in the work still, but I feel like if he does get the opportunities and, you know, he finds the right club with the right style to fit him, I think he's looking at a very bright future. Zach and Joao, what do you think of Jota, you know, not just this season, but last as well, and as a player on the whole?
Joao, you want to start or should I?
Go.
I mean, look, Jota, I think, was probably the best player at the, the U19 Euros? It's in 2018. Yeah. You know, we saw, and I think that was a real testament to Portugal's strength in numbers, because you saw players such as Rafael Leão, João Félix, you know, the big stars miss out for various reasons, and yet Portugal still dominated. And one of the biggest reasons behind that was Jota, or João Felipe, as he's known. But one of those players who can really just who can perform on either flank and who can really wreak havoc against any defense when he's on form. We saw how crucial he was playing on the opposite flank of Francisco Trincao. And, you know, it took Trincao a while to finally get consistent opportunities at Braga. It was our good old friend Ruben Amorim who finally gave him, you know, a path into the first team. But I think that we still haven't quite seen that I guess we haven't quite seen that same breakthrough from Jota yet. I think that, I mean, one thing that is, I guess, positive, though, is the fact that Jota is playing semi-regularly at Real Valladolid. He isn't a starter yet, but he is playing a lot off the bench. And, you know, that is a lot better than just, you know, I think a Gonzalo Ramos situation where you're pretty much in purgatory, you know, not really playing much for the B team, not really playing much for the first team, get the odd cup appearance. So I definitely think it's a better situation than that, but I'm not convinced that Valladolid was the right team. It's more of a team that, I guess, prioritizes defensive solidity, a team that will, you know, line up in a 4-4-2, and where I guess players such as Jota will not be able to shine as much. So I'm glad that he did leave on loan, but I'm not sure that Valladolid was the right club for him. I'm also not sure why Benfica have never really given him as many opportunities as his talent deserves, because this is a very good, promising young talent, and he could land Benfica, you know, a lot of money. But I think I'd like to see him maybe go to a Rio Ave or a Vitória potentially, and join one of those, you know, top half teams where a player of his attacking talent is able to shine more. He's just a really fantastic prospect when he's on his day, who can just, you know, play at like a at the speed of light, with close control, and you know, can cut in and send in crosses, or he can go and stretch the defense, either cutting in or going to the touchline. So I think he's there's a lot to like in his profile, whether that's his, you know, close control, his balance, or just his ability to just run at defenses with a ton of speed. So I'm not sure that Valladolid was the right move for him, but I definitely think that it was a better move than just sitting around at Benfica and, you know, hoping that Jorge Jesus would give him a chance in the first team, especially when his repertoire with youth players is probably even worse than Bruno Lage's.
Yeah, I agree. Joao, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree with Zach. I don't believe that the Valladolid was the right club for Jota. Well, it's easy to talk after if he started playing and he did well. We were having a different conversation, but we have to work what we have. And so I don't think Valladolid was the right team for him, because as Zach said, he's a very creative player. He needs to have freedom to fail, if that makes sense. It's very important for those kind of players, for these kind of players to fail and to learn and to be in the situation and in a team and with a coach that lets them fail, and not only lets them fail, but help them to cope with those mistakes and to learn from those mistakes. And when I look at Real Valladolid, I don't see that. I don't see a club like a technical staff able to help him. I'm not saying the coaches aren't good, none of that, but the context, I don't see that. For me, I would like to see him in Portugal. Zach talked about Rio Ave. I think with this season, at the end of this season and coming on to next season with Miguel Cardoso, which is a coach that does that allows the players to make mistakes. You are seeing Rafael Camacho doing very good nowadays in Rio Ave. In the past, in the first tenure of Miguel Cardoso with Rio Ave, you saw Ruben Ribeiro, who then went up to with Jorge Jesus to Sporting. And Ruben Ribeiro was a player like Jota, in the sense of a player that wants to dribble, wants to go one-on-one, very technical gifted. I think he needs to find the right place for him and the right club. I don't see Benfica being that club, at least in the short period. International, I don't know if you agree with me, but a league like Holland, Eredivisie, where the teams are more balanced to attack, and there are more space, and there are more space. I think would be a more better fit for him, but let's see next season. I believe that next season we will stay in Portugal. Perhaps even Rio Ave, as Zach talked about. But we know that Zach has information. He's just saying that for that in the future he comes in here and says I was right. but yeah. Let's see next season.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think a move to Eredivisie would be a positive one for him. We know a lot of players flourish there. You just have to look at the likes of Mason Mount, who, you know, currently one of the best attacking midfielders in the Premier League, you know, started flourishing in the Eredivisie. I think a move to either, you know, PSV or Ajax would be very promising for Jota. You know, it would be a permanent deal.
Sorry, Daniel. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but you were talking about players. We were talking about Mason Mount, and he reminded me of Lucas Piazon, who almost was like a phoenix. He went to Chelsea as a very big prospect, and then he went to Vitesse, I guess, on loan, and he did very well, and he kind of revitalized himself, and now he's performing very well in Braga. After a good campaign in Rio Ave. So, yeah, very good point.
Yeah, there's definitely that possibility. I mean, you know, he's a young player. You know, I think if Benfica were to sell him outright to one of the teams in the Eredivisie, I think they'd be losing out on a potential big sum of money. You know, potentially they could put in a clause where, you know, they get 30% of the profits or something like that. But I think, you know, I think Jota will definitely feel hard done to be let go by Benfica, but definitely at least a loan move to Eredivisie would be a very positive one for him. Zach, let's go to you next. Who's your talent of the week?
Yeah, great pick by Joao, but I think I had a tough time picking because I just want to highlight just how good Sebastian Coates has been. I know he's 30 years old, so he's not really a young talent anymore, but I think for me, probably the best player in Portugal right now, deservedly won the player of the month. May not get it over Pote for the player of the year because he's not an attacker, but how crucial has he been? And on Friday, chipping in to the goal scoring department with a crucial goal over Santa Clara. But given the fact that he's not really young, I think I will have to go with Evan Nielsen. So Evan Nielsen is a young striker for Porto who hasn't quite managed to break into the starting lineup yet for Porto, but is playing some quality minutes under Sergio Conceição. 21 years old and recently joined from Fluminense, a Brazilian club which has a fantastic production line of attackers such as João Pedro, Richarlison, Marcos Paulo. And I think that Evan Nielsen is a player who could end up catching fire over the next few months of the season. Even though Porto, if they do manage to get eliminated by Juventus, I think that the season is sort of a write-off at this point. But obviously the only priority for them at that point will be getting Champions League football. So I think that Evan Nielsen it's not easy to be a young attacking creative player and break into Sergio Conceição's side. We've seen that with Oliver Torres eventually going to Sevilla after not really getting many chances to be a starter. We've seen that with a lot of players. Shoya Nakajima is another one. And so I'm not sure if it's that much of a surprise that Evan Nielsen hasn't been able to solidify a starting spot over Musa Marega and Mehdi Taremi. But I personally think that Marega, as good as he is in certain occasions, he is a very frustrating, inconsistent player. And I definitely would like to see Evan Nielsen get more minutes at Porto. But I think it's also worth noting just a very interesting stat I saw the other day. Evan Nielsen with 3 goals scored in just 312 minutes in Liga NOS. He is the Porto player who needs the least amount of minutes to score. Although he could still improve in certain ways with just 27% of shots converted. I think that's a very interesting stat. That's from Goal Point, very good account. So I think that Evan Nielsen is a player who will get more chances, especially with, I think, the potential for Conceição to leave at the end of the season. I could definitely see the new Porto manager trying to sell a few of those veteran players, such as, I think, Musa Marega, and trusting more in youngsters such as Evan Nielsen. But despite the fact that he hasn't gotten many opportunities yet, he has managed to, I think, show why he has a lot of talent and why he has a big potential. I think that that Marega is a player who is probably reaching the end of his peak. You know, I think that he's definitely one of Conceição's favorite players, but frankly, I think that Evan Nielsen, there are a lot of games where I think he deserves to be starting where Porto will need something extra from him. Obviously, Porto, he wasn't a cheap reinforcement either, but I think that he has the potential to make that investment from what they paid Fluminense. I think that he has potential to make it seem like a bargain.
Yeah, no. I mean, yeah, I think Evan Nielsen, obviously, he's still young, will potentially get chances under a new manager, probably, as it looks like Sergio Conceição may not be keeping his job. I think for me, with Evan Nielsen, I think the moment that I knew that he was going to be a very good player, whether that be for Porto or for someone else, was the game against Gil Santo. Where, you know, Porto won 1-0 and Evan Nielsen was by far and away the best player on the pitch. You know, he scored a goal, but more notably, you know, he hit the woodwork twice. And it wasn't even just like his finishing, but his creation as well, you know, being able to play incisive passes when dropping deeper and playing the balls into like the medium channels, you know, being able to receive it and, you know, hold it. Because despite playing in a front two of Tony Martinez, we know that Tony likes to push forward a bit more. And Evan Nielsen was doing a lot of the heavy work, and he was also getting the rewards for it. You know, if I look back at his stats from the game, he had 3 key passes in that game, along with his goal. You know, I thought it was a very good, impressive performance from him. Joao, what are your thoughts on Evan Nielsen?
Yeah, I think you talk about Jota, and it's and it was hard for him to play under Jorge Jesus, and Evan Nielsen, with all the difference, of course, will be hard for not only because you have Marega, which as Zach talked about, in for Conceição is unexpendable, is key for Sergio Conceição model. Like it or not, the way Marega plays, for example, for me, is not the kind of forward of striker that I like, but in what he does, he is very good. In the way he attacks depth and all of that is very, very, very good. One of the best in Europe in that specific moment of the game. And I see Evan Nielsen more like an alternative to Taremi. And when you look at Taremi, it's I thought I think Zach talked about Taremi being one of the best strikers in the league, and I agree with him. He was a remarkable signing, first from Rio Ave. We discovered him and now Porto. Ivanilson, I don't know where I read it, but to give credit to the person, I read in some article that Ivanilson is very similar to Hulk, in the sense of when Hulk arrived in Portugal, he was a player that had a lot of success in his actions, but not because he but mainly because of his physical abilities, not because of the way he thought the game. I don't know if this makes sense for you. Ivanilson for me is similar. He comes out of Brazil, where he had a lot of success in his actions, not because he needed to think about what he was doing, but because he was so much more strong physically, so much strong technical wise, that if he decided well or not, he was irrelevant. And in Portugal, it's different. In Portugal, you need to be strong physical and technical gifted to make the difference, but you need to think the game as well. You need to make good decisions. You need to be in the right space at the right time. And I think that is a process. And Ivanilson in that area needs to work a little bit, because when he is able to be on the right space at the right time, I think was Dennis that talking about the way he impacted the game against Gil Vicente, he makes a difference. But yeah, I compare him a little bit with Hulk in the way he went to Porto, and the difficulties that Hulk had in the first season, and I believe that Ivanilson has to do the same and the same path in that kind of to overcome that kind of hurdles.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Last but not least, Sean, who are you choosing for your talent of the week in today's episode?
Well, I don't know if you will have time to talk about the Estoril, but I choose a player of Estoril. I choose Miguel Crespo, which is perhaps the best player of the second division. Well, for me, for sure, he's the best player of second division. I don't know if he will be crowned the best player of second division. It's not only the talent of the week, but turns out to be the talent of the season in the second league. He is 24 years old, and he has quite a curious path. He won the regional league of Viana do Castelo with Neves. I think it was Neves Football Club. Then he went out to play with in Campeonato de Portugal with that team. I believe they didn't did well. Then he went to Merlinense, then to Braga B, until he joined the Estoril 2 years ago. So from his path, you can see that he's very resilient. We have to work hard to get where he is now. And as a player on the field, he possesses an excellent close control and dribbling ability, which can be used here if you imagine him in a top tier team next season, like, I don't know, Braga, Guimarães. Those kind of qualities can be used to allow his team to maintain the ball, the ball. And this allows him not only to create societies along the field for one-two combinations, to ask for the ball in the right space at the right time. So, and this is a very important quality for me when I'm looking to analyze midfielders and when I'm watching games, to appear inside the box, to finish it. To shoot to the goal, and he has 6 goals, I guess, in the second division so far, and is a very key player for Estoril, and is ideal for Estoril way of playing and the dynamics that Bruno Pinheiro brought to the team and made him, and this made him at least for me the best player in the second league to this date.
Zach, what are your thoughts? Obviously, we expect you to have watched a lot of the Segunda, as I haven't as well. I haven't watched a lot at all. But what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I can't claim to know anywhere near as much about the Segunda, unfortunately, as well. But I will say that what a season from Estoril. I mean, they've been in the second division for... what was it? I think 3 years at this point. But currently, first place in the Segunda. Looks like they're going to return under the reign of, actually, I believe it's an American president, Jeffrey Saunders, who purchased the club, I think 2 years ago. Incredible run in the Taça de Portugal, you know, defeating Boavista, Rio Ave, Marítimo, before losing to Benfica in the semifinals. So between that and between that and their, you know, being top of the league, incredible season from them. And, you know, even when they were in the second division, well, they still are in the second division, they've always had, you know, good quality players who end up making a name for themselves somewhere else. I mean, I believe that, Just off the top of my head, Marcos Antonio, one of the players who's impressing under Luis Castro at Shakhtar Donetsk, only spent a few months at Estoril, but just another player, Mateus Nunes, who we've talked a bit about this episode. You know, Felipe Suarez, Dennis, I know you love him, and so they've always found a way to, you know, even despite being in the second division for the past few years, taking quality talents and building them up. And so I definitely trust Joao's Ward. Obviously one of my favorites for the past few years, who's finally getting opportunities at the first team level, Daniel Braganza, spent the last season on loan at Estoril. So incredibly excited to see them. Well, it looks like we will see them in the Primeira next season. And from all the people who I know who watch the Segunda regularly, they say that Estoril is a fantastic team to watch. So and you know, I'm incredibly excited to see them, hopefully in the Primeira. And you know, this is why we have guests like Joao on the show, because they can tell us a little bit about players in the lower leagues that we may have not watched, focusing on the Primera so much.
But Zach, you can watch Estoril tomorrow if you want. Estoril will play against Feirense, so it's first against second, and it's a good opportunity for you and Dennis if you want to wipe up on the hype train of Miguel Crespo. And
how do you differentiate between Ferenc and Ferenc? Because that seems like Like from a neutral, that just seems like absolute torture. Differentiating, those are two different teams. Like it's just crazy to me. Like it's
Like, you know, it's funny because when I was little, I struggled as well. I remember a time when I think it was my father or my uncle went to Santa Maria da Feira, which is the home team of Feirense, which is will play against Surreal tomorrow, and I asked for a shirt of Feirense. Because it's hard in here in Portugal. But Feirense is in Algarve, Zach, and yep. Feirense is in the second division.
Just way too like complicated. But it reminds me, like in the Moscow Metro, real random. There are literally two metro stops, actually four, who have duplicates with the same exact name in the Moscow Metro. So it's like, for a neutral viewer, that just must be like hell.
Did you win the World Cup? Yeah, I did as well.
Okay. Yeah. And I got mixed around because I went to like the one Dadash Gafka on the light brown line when I needed to go to the other one on the dark brown line. So it's just, it reminds me a little bit of the Ferenc, you know, confusion.
Yeah. It was a massive experience, huh? World Cup. Oh my God.
Yeah. Jean, thank you so much, you know, for spending your time here today speaking with us. You know, you provided a lot of great insight on all the topics that we've spoken about. So thank you very much for spending your time today.